Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Amor Towles is the author of the New York Times bestsellers Rules of Civility, A Gentleman in Moscow, and The Lincoln Highway. The three novels have collectively sold more than 5 million copies and have been translated into more than 35 languages. He now shares some of his shorter fiction, six stories based on an inn, New York City, and a novella set in Golden Age Hollywood. The new book is Table for Two Fictions. It is just out in paperback from Penguin Books, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Amor Towles back to the Roundtable. How are you?
Good, Joe. Nice to be back.
Very nice to have you back. Thank you very much for doing this. I greatly appreciate it. This is a beautiful collection, and it is just gorgeous to read. I am interested at of how, with the novel writing, these stories come to you and fit their way into your work schedule.
I mean, I should say to begin with that, as you may recall, I've been writing since I was a kid, and I think like many novelists, my starting place was the short story. You know, when I was a young writer, that's the modality you're operating in as you're trying to master elements of craft by writing lots of different short stories from different perspectives, set in different situations, in different tones. So it's very natural for me to work in the short story format. But you're right, as a novelist, for me, a novel takes years to design and ultimately write. It's all-consuming for me during that process, and that kind of pushes all other kind of writing to the side. So for me, short stories sort of tend to sort of surface as an attractive thing to do in between books. Say, in between The Gentleman in Moscow and The Lincoln Highway, I take some time before leaping back into the multi-year project to do some shorter work, almost as sort of a breather, and may sort of save up some ideas for short stories to tackle during that kind of time. All the work that is in this collection was written in the last 10 years. So while I've written short stories since I was young, these are all sort of been written in between Rules of Civility and A Gentleman, or A Gentleman on Lincoln Highway, or shortly after The Lincoln Highway was done in that time frame.
Does it ever, is it always defined in your mind that this will be short fiction as opposed to something that will go longer?
The answer is related to the fact that for all of my work, I tend to start with a very simple premise that often comes out of nowhere, or it may be tied to something I've observed. You know, the notion a guy gets trapped in a hotel for a long period of time. You know, that, right. That was the notion that began, that ultimately grew into A Gentleman in Moscow. So when I have an idea like that, if it's compelling to me, very quickly I'll tend to have a sense of where it takes place, when it takes place, who the main characters are, what are some of the key events. You know, and I mean that'll be something that'll reveal itself to me in a matter of minutes. And once you sort of have a sense like that, that okay, this is who they are and what's going to happen and where it's going to be, pretty much right at the beginning, I have a feel for, is this a short story for me or a novel? And it really relates to, you kind of imagine entering a building you've never been into, a mansion or, you know, a house. And in some, you go into a house and you get a sense of, oh yeah, there's four rooms in this place. You know, I could see two of them from where I'm standing. Sometimes you go into a building and you're like, oh man, where does this end? You know, there's hallways going in every direction and there's eight doors on either side of the hallway and you know, three stories. And it's like that. When I have an idea that feels like I'm entering a mansion, you know, I can sense all the different doors that might be opened as a part of the investigation into that narrative. And that one screams out to be a novel. But when it feels like it's a simple thing and I can kind of see the entire, you know, situation around me, then I'm going to probably say, yeah, let's keep this as a short story. Keep it concise, keep it tight, and don't overdo it.
What I find fascinating of what you just said is I certainly understand the concise part, but there's nothing simple about these stories either. They have the DNA of your longest novels.
Well, I appreciate you saying so. And you know, one of the wonderful things about the short story as a form in any language, or but certainly in the American tradition, is that it comes in many shapes. the approach to short story writing that we see in Hemingway is very different from the approach that we see in Flannery O'Connor, or that we all, would see in John Updike, later on. Each author is approaching the form and it was a sort of a different style. And it is true that I think I bring, my short stories are longer than many people's short stories, for instance. I do like them to be a little bit more intricate, to have a little bit more development of characters and events. And that's just for, I don't know why. That's just sort of the natural place for me to land. So I do hope that the stories, while still being abbreviated, have some of the complexity that you would discover in reading of a novel.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you have stories here that New York and then in the West Coast in Los Angeles. And I find that fascinating, but I'm interested in how much of that was conscious, especially given Hollywood being what Hollywood is, but also the idea of having, not a comparison exactly, but two very different cities.
Yeah. I didn't sort of plan 10 years ago to build a collection that would include stories of New York and the novella in Los Angeles. The individual works kind of grew organically, but at a certain point where I was like, oh, you know what? I've got a handful of New York stories here that I think would feel really nice together, that they would sort of be in harmony and resonate with each other. Maybe it's time to pull them together into some sort of a collection. And then as I thought about it, I had been working on Even Hollywood already, and I had an idea to expand. I had done an initial version of Even Hollywood. It was only about 50 pages long, and it was quite enigmatic and short. And I knew that I wanted to expand that story, and that ultimately became a novella, which is over 200 pages long. And as that was happening, I really felt, okay, these could go really nicely together. It's a little counterintuitive because the New York stories are kind of set in around the year 2000, and the novella is set in, as you said, in the Golden Age in 1938 and 39 in Hollywood. But the reason I really felt they balanced each other nicely is partly because of the roles that New York and Los Angeles or Hollywood play in our cultural imagination. New York and Los Angeles are not better cities or better environments than other towns in America. They're not better than Houston or Chicago or Akron or Pittsburgh, for that matter. But what distinguishes them from most of the other American cities and towns is that they have achieved a certain mythic status, not just in the United States, but really around the world. Right? You can kind of pretty much go anywhere in the world and say to somebody, tell me what New York means to you. How do you envision it? What happens there? And people will be able to fill in those blanks. They'll be able to tell you what the city looks like and what its character is because of having seen it in film, having seen it in television, having read about it in literature, having seen it in the news and society depictions. So there is that sort of awareness of New York, but there is the same kind of awareness of Hollywood, of course. It's a global awareness, and they're very different as cities on opposite coasts, but both sort of attract people who are, new people are coming to both those cities all the time. People who want to reinvent themselves, who want to achieve, people coming from different countries. So there's some very similarities there. But New York City and Los Angeles are very different towns with very different sort of feel. And the dreams that are sort of envisioned in those two different cities are very different. So for those reasons, it kind of felt fun to put these two cities side by side and to sort of follow the strivers in New York versus the strivers in Los Angeles.
Amor Towles' novels include Rules of Civility, A Gentleman in Moscow, and The Lincoln Highway. The latest is a collection of six stories, Table for Two, and it's just out in paperback from Penguin. I love these stories when I first read them, but I have to say that in the year or so since the hardcover release, the one that has stuck with me the most is The Bootlegger. And
yeah.
It is a fascinating story where a young banker goes on what should be a very happy date. They go to Carnegie Hall, and then they observe this guy secretly recording the concerts. I'm curious as to how that was born, and also of what it is that is so, because we can see in ourselves whether we would be the person who would complain or not complain.
Yeah, I think the first five pages of The Bootlegger are probably the most autobiographical pages I've written in my career. My wife and I, when we were in our early 30s, decided, yeah, let's go to, we'll subscribe to a series and go to a handful of performances at Carnegie Hall. We hadn't really been accustomed to going to Carnegie Hall. We were familiar with classical music, but we weren't, deeply knowledgeable fans. So it was sort of a, let's dress up. The kids are now have a babysitter. Let's dress up and go out. So we went to a fancy dinner, and we went to Carnegie Hall and sit down to see a famous pianist, and an old guy sits next to me in a trench coat. And as the concert begins, I realize that he's got a microphone sticking out of his sleeve and that he's recording the concert. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God, of all places to come to Carnegie Hall and bootleg, bootleg a concert. And the next week we come back to see a different pianist because there's a series, and in series at Carnegie Hall, you sit in the same seats. So we sit down for the second performance, and there he is again, right next to me with his microphone. And then I was really riled up. And then I'm like, thinking to myself things like, bootlegging is not a victimless crime. This guy is stealing intellectual property from the composers and the performers and from Carnegie Hall itself. And I'm going to turn him in. At the intermission, I'm going to get the usher, and I'm going to point him out, and we're going to, get him arrested. And now, of course, I didn't do that. I did not turn him in. But this all happened, as I say, 30 years ago, roughly. And a few years ago, in between books, when I was writing some short stories, that moment kind of came back to me 25 years later. And I thought, that's an interesting night. It would be interesting to go back and imagine that situation with, a different guy in the seat. It's not me necessarily, but a different guy. But this time, maybe he does turn in the old man. And, let's see what happens. Let's see what happens when he turns in the old man. And it does not go well for one of them. And I'll leave it to the readers to find out which is what, which one gets hurt the most.
And you didn't know the end of the story, even though you were the guy next to the old guy recording. You didn't know what the reasoning was. So you created it fictionally.
Yeah. And and a lot of short fiction, and this is probably true of fiction in general, but short fiction is a little bit of a thought experiment, right? It's a thought experiment of starting someplace and then beginning to ask yourself, what could happen? Is he there alone? No, he's there with his wife, and should he tell a story? No, let's let the wife tell the story. Well, as things unfold, what are going to be her opinions of this? And when the young man does turn in the old man, does he regret it? Does he feel, victorious? If he regrets it, what does he do? Does he try to find the old man to apologize? You're sort of asking yourself a series of questions and imagining different ways in which events could unfold, and to some degree selecting, right? For any story that you're reading, there are many different variations that have been set aside by the author. We're not going to go down that road. This is the right path for the telling of this tale. So, and then as you're moving towards the conclusion, of course, that's a part of it too, is how does this end? Does it end at this moment? Does it end at the next moment? And one of the things I really love about that story, actually, and I plan my short stories just as I plan my novels, so I know where they're going to end. But I think one of the pleasures of that story is it almost ends four times. And you'll see that when you're reading it. For you listeners who have not read it yet, you're going to get to a moment and you're like, there, I see, it's come to conclusion. But then something else happens, and then something else happens, you're kind of, the ending keeps getting pulled away from you a little bit further, as you get deeper into the situation at each step. I think that's a lovely aspect of that particular tip.
As we wrap up our time together, I am interested in the Hollywood story. when you write about Evelyn Ross from Rules of Civility. Given what you had told us at the beginning of our conversation about sitting down and deciding of what shape it's going to be, I'm guessing at this, I don't know, but it seems like there would be market forces that say, oh, there was this very successful novel, Rules of Civility. This would be great if Amor would write a sequel. And so when it turns out to be a novella, was there any pressure on that, or was it just exactly what you wanted it to be?
There's no pressure of that kind. And I think if you were a writer in today's world of suspense fiction, and or mystery fiction, or romance, or sci-fi even, and you created a successful character, or a successful situation, successful detective, or whatever, an action figure, well, for sure, the publishers would come back to the author and say, hey, man, how about a part two to this? How about another event? Because the way that, in those realms that you build followings and of readership, and the way in which the publishers then to make money is by following a thread, taking Jack Reacher and seeing what Jack Reacher does over a series of books. This is not the way that the literary world tends to work. So it's quite rare in literary fiction for there to be sequels. Right. It does happen. To its credit, the world of the editors of the literary world tend to leave such decisions in the hands of the writer to pursue their own fascinations. So absolutely, Eve was my, it was my obsession that I wanted to follow on. And one of the reasons why, and I think readers will sense this, as a lover of American narrative since I was a kid, certainly you're going to be interested in American storytelling of all kinds. Noir is going to be one of them, right? Because the hard-boiled detective novel and the film noir that is its cousin, this is one of the great inventions of American narratives, right? It was started in the United States. It could only have started in the United States. It's been copied all over the world and loved all over the world in movies and books. And so it's an American narrative that as a writer in America and a lover of American storytelling, you're going to want to eventually, try your hand at it to some degree, or borrow from that voice. So as soon as I knew that Eve, who's a troublemaker, was going to be in Hollywood in 1938, it was very natural for it to become a noirish piece. And in a way, I've been waiting to write that piece, since I was a boy going to see Humphrey Bogart, play Sam Spade. Yeah. Right? I wanted to have a chance to inhabit that world and approach it in my own way.
Well, it's an amazing collection. It's an amazing story, and it's an amazing collection. It's Table for Two Fictions. It is out in paperback from Penguin Books. Amor Towles, always a pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me back, Joe. I look forward to talking to you down the road.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Table for Two Fictions by Amor Towles. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.